Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, when people are missing, many first responders turn to canine search and rescue teams. And one of them is our guest, Jan Thompson. She's an EMT, a canine search specialist, a member of the Canine Emergency Response Teams. It's a professional search and rescue organization. So talking with her about the work that she and her team members do, including the dogs, and love to hear from you. What would you like to know about search and rescue dogs and their handlers? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jan Thompson, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, good morning. Thank you for asking me.
How'd you get involved in canine search and rescue?
Well, my story is unique to me, as it is to all canine handlers. Many years ago, when I was a young mother, I think it was 1982, I saw a news documentary about the earthquake in Mexico City, and there was a woman working her canine, a German Shepherd, up into the rubble, very much of what you're looking at, everybody's seeing right now in Florida. And it totally intrigued me and stuck in the back of my mind until many years later. It was actually in the year 2000 that I was doing a PR event as an EMT at the same place a small search group was doing a PR, their PR event. And I excused myself from my EMT partners. I said, I need to go talk to that group. And it started back then. I worked with that group for 1 year as a hider, also learning about training a dog, trying to decide what type of partner I wanted and whether I wanted to continue. And it took a good year for me training just about every week to make the commitment. And wow. I have been with it ever since.
So, and I assume you need some certifications to be involved in this.
We help people who join our teams obtain those certifications, and we require that at some point within their time with us, before they can be deployed out into the field, they need to obtain what is called a SAR-TEC 2. And that basically is teaching them as a person what they need to know, not as a dog handler, but as a person. What do they need to know before they get deployed out into the field? And that is compass work, radio work, everything down to what is the best clothing to wear out in the field. So once they've obtained that, then we are able to deploy them out into the field and feel comfortable that they are know what they're doing.
Greg in Appleton asks how accurate dogs are really. Are they tested for their abilities?
Our dogs are certified. And a lot of times that means they did really well on that day. Dogs are not machines. They have their off days, too, where they're not performing up to snuff. But we don't deploy dogs unless they are certified and certified with a national organization.
So there is a national organization for it. You know, we're seeing, as you said, in Florida, we're seeing one of the types of search and rescue operations that use dogs, but there are other types as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yes, there is. There are dogs for area search, and that would be a dog who looks for live find. We are certified up to 80 acres. That means at base, the search manager can say, here is 80-acre area. I want you and your dog to search it. There's also in the USAR, or the rubble that you're seeing now, there is a USAR certification, and that is teaching their dogs to find the live person within that rubble. And generally, any USAR dogs or rubble dogs, disaster dogs, are trained in just one discipline. That way, they can send in the first wave of trained dogs looking for just the live people. So when they do alert, we're confident that it is a live person. If they were to send in a dog that was trained in human remains detection and live, you would not be certain. Are they alerting on somebody who is alive or who is deceased? And they would spend a lot of time and effort and resources trying to access that subject, not knowing that that person may be deceased, when there may be somebody alive 20 feet next to them, and they could have spent that time and resources locating them. But I talked about human remains detection, and we have dogs that are certified in area and water and USAR, rubble, also called rubble or disaster. There's also trailing and tracking dogs, and you think of bloodhounds when you think of those types of dogs, that type of discipline. So, yes, there are various disciplines that dogs are trained in and certified in.
Are some? I wonder what types of dogs are best for the various types of work. You mentioned the bloodhounds, but there are, you see a, seems like you see different types of dogs out there.
Right. And a lot of times when we think of bloodhounds, we think of them as the Cadillac of noses. That's why they are so good at what they do. But there are other dogs who do just as well in tracking and trailing. And I did print out something the other day because I knew that that would be a question, as it always is. And this kind of explains a little bit. It says, if you ask any group of canine handlers what the best breed for search and rescue is, you're going to receive many different biased answers, and that could be shepherds, collies, labs, goldens, bloodhounds. All these breeds have a few things in common, and that is what makes the foundations of a good search and rescue candidate. These foundations are genetic drive, motivation, instinct, biddability, athleticism. And no matter what the breed, they are all confined to these inherent genetic traits. And despite how much someone works, wants, and tries to make a star dog, some breeds are just easier to turn into a mission-ready partner than others. So maybe that explains it a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Do they start as puppies, or can an older dog pick this up?
There are older dogs that do, but we're talking young dogs, not old dogs. Anybody under two and under is trainable. Once you get past two, you have some set behaviors that you might always be fighting against. And because you tend to fight those behaviors, you may not be able to train the dog the way that they need to be trained. So we like to start with puppies.
So tell us about your dog.
My dog is my fourth partner, and he is a German Shepherd. And he was a very high drive dog, and that's what I wanted. I wanted a male and a higher drive dog. My other partners had all been females. So there's that saying, be careful of what you wish for because you just might get it. Well, that's what I got with my dog, Yogi. And he has been a learning experience for me, learning how to handle that higher drive, bullheaded type dog. But he does his job. He loves his job. And I love him when he is working. He may be hard to live with day to day, but I do love that dog when he's working.
And I'm wondering about the previous dogs. Were they and how that works. Does a dog sort of age out, or what happens?
Yeah. Well, my first partner was a German Shepherd, because I think back in my mind, you know, I remember it was Caroline Hebert, actually, and she did write a book, So Others May Live. She was the one that I saw working her German Shepherd in the rubble of Mexico City. And my first partner ended up being a beautiful German Shepherd, and her name was Cookie. And she got older, and I had to retire her from area search. You know, 80 acres is a lot to put an older dog out. So, and she was cross-trained at that time, and so we just did smaller human remains detection or boat work looking for drowned subjects. And Tippy Toes was a Butte Coon Hound. She was my second partner, and she did tracking trailing. She was never able to obtain the highest certification necessary to be deployable, because she tended to get too distracted on cross trails. You know, it could have been somebody else that walked across. So I needed to pull her, and that's hard. That's something that a lot of handlers have trouble doing, is realizing that your dog is not the best dog to put out in the field. And you always try to think of, is this the dog I want searching for my child or my grandmother? And so she ended up getting pulled. My second dog was a flat-coated retriever named Brooke. And she was donated to me by some breeders in Minnesota. And she was a total joy. She loved her work. She loved people. And she was just live find only. And she took the place, took Cookie's place in looking for a live find up to 80 acres. Plus, she also did rubble work like you see down in Florida. And she also did therapy work. She worked as a therapy dog in the hospital where I worked. So. And then Cookie Dog is, Yogi Bear is a German Shepherd. So those are my four partners.
And so when a partner is no longer can work, do you keep the partner?
We purchase our dogs. We are all volunteers. We don't call ourselves professional, because that kind of puts us in a paid type domain, and we're not. We're all proficient volunteers. We purchase our dogs. We pay for everything for our dogs. We pay for the training. And yes, our dogs are with us until the end.
Oh, man, that's great. Jan Thompson, our guest, an EMT, a canine search specialist, and a member of canine emergency response teams. Join in if you have a question or comment for her. I'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Seems like a good time to talk about canine emergency response teams, the handlers and their dogs, especially with the terrible tragedy in Florida, where the teams are working to try and find if someone is still alive in the rubble. So Jan Thompson, our guest, EMT, canine search specialist. I'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment for her. Give a call. Number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Matter of fact, Darlene from Waupaca wondered if about the mental health of handler and dog. How do you cope? And is there some kind of help available?
As far as doing the work we do, we certainly support each other. And we have to remember that when we work our dogs, and if they're in a situation where they're finding deceased people, it's difficult for us. But we have to remember that this is their job, and we have to make it as rewarding as possible. So it's a type of game, and the dog works really hard for their reward, whatever it is that they choose. And usually it's a ball or a tug toy. And we have to remember that when they locate the whatever it is that they're asked to locate, we have to remember that it's a big party at the end of that, so that they always continue to work hard.
So it may appear that you're how do I put this? So you have to be kind of lively and upbeat when they find someone.
We tell people, especially new people, and guys have a hard time with this too, is you have to find your really girly voice, your high girly voice. You have to make it such a big party at the end. Once your dog has located, whether it's a live subject or whether it is human remains, they're working hard for whatever reward it is that they demand. And you have to give it to them, and you have to give them that party time to make it so rewarding for them that they continue to want to work for you and continue to look for whatever it is that you are asking them to look for.
Therese and Stevens Point emailed to ask how many people are in your group and where are they in the state. Are they located all over?
They are. And I kind of put down a list of counties where everybody is located. I'm in Barron County, and we have members in Shawano, Marathon, Burnett, Wood, Brown, Polk, Portage, St. Croix, and Chisago County, Minnesota. So,
wow.
Yeah, I am part of the Northwest Division of our group, and we also have a Central Division, and that's Central Wisconsin.
So are we finding, or can you find similar groups in every state or not?
Oh yeah. Yes. And Wisconsin is actually very blessed to have what we call STOW, and that is Search Teams of Wisconsin. And that is a group of teams that have come together and have agreed that to the same national certification for handlers and canines, so that we can call upon each other when there is a missing person. When there is somebody missing and law enforcement calls us and asks us to respond, we then notify all the other teams in STOW and let them know that we are responding, and either put them on standby or tell them to respond also. Because the faster you can get all the resources available out in the field looking for that lost subject, the better the outcome.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sandy in Madison has a question. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. My question is, I have heard that dogs that are trained to find only live survivors, and say in Miami, as those dogs are looking and they're only looking for live people, if all they are finding are deceased people, that the dogs get very depressed. And I wanted to know if that was true.
It's not, because a lot of dogs that are trained in USAR are going to come across human remains. And it's the handler's job to keep it upbeat for their canine partner and continue to work them within the rubble. But the handler may very well have some emotional response to what they're doing. And we always say that our emotional responses, anything that we feel, is going to travel down the lead. And the dogs may very well be picking up on what's happening with their handler.
So it's a tough job for you sometimes, or other volunteers, to kind of not show that.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think. Sandy, thank you. Mark in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thank you so much for your work, both as an EMT and as a dog handler. I'm just wondering what the age and or fitness requirements are for handlers.
Well, if there was an age requirement, I'd probably be aging out soon. I retired in 2019, and I'm pretty sure that my current partner, who is 8 and a half, when he retires, it's going to be time for me to say I'm done. You do have to be physically fit, and I continue to work hard to be able to stay out in the field and not be a hindrance to the search effort. I certainly don't want resources coming to rescue me. So I work hard to stay as physically fit as somebody my age can be and be able to keep up with my dog. We are always looking for younger people to join our teams. All teams are, because they bring the possibility of continuing our work on. And it is my hope before I completely retire that I will be able to have mentored several young people to step up and do the job that we're doing.
Yeah, very good. Mark, thank you. Susan emailed to ask how you are contacted regarding a rescue, and where do you go? Just local or nationwide? And what types of rescues have you been involved in? But let's start with the first part first. How are you contacted, and do you go just local or nationwide?
We respond to law enforcement call-outs, and any handler that self-deploys to a search is somebody that you want to be asked them to leave. That is totally irresponsible on their part. Law enforcement is in charge of searches, and we do a lot of PR work with law enforcement, and they have our names and numbers on their Rolodex at dispatch. So that's who we respond to. And if law enforcement says, yes, go ahead and contact your other search teams that you work with in Wisconsin, then we will be calling them and activating them for a search. But we always wait for law enforcement to do so. There are some searches that law enforcement has said we don't know where they are. And if you want to continue looking at family request, we have done that. There are teams or groups that continue work like that. I'm thinking of the John Francis Foundation. There's also Search Rescue Recovery Resources of Minnesota who also do that. The Polly Kloss Foundation. These are foundations that pick up where law enforcement has said, well, we don't know, and we can't put any more resources or time into this. And family contacts these groups and are able to put together members from search teams across the country. And I have been on groups like that, and we've gone to Canada to search. So we could be deployed just about anywhere, depending on where that search takes place and whoever they contacted. What was the rest of the question?
Wondering what types of rescues have you personally been involved in?
Oh, over 21 years, just about everything from rubble, like you saw. There were, I believe, six of us from CURT that were members of the Wisconsin Task Force 1. And so we have been deployed to a rubble situation. We were deployed and then called off from going to Florida a couple of years ago when there were hurricanes going up the East Coast. So depending on what dog I have, what am I going to be deployed to? Right now I have a human remains detection dog. So I'm being called out on everything from a drowning. Like, we just had a call to be on standby for Minnesota. There's a drowning up there. To working an old case that maybe law enforcement has gotten new information about a possible place that the subject could be. And they will call us and ask us to bring our dogs and check that out. So,
wow. Maria in Washington Island, your turn. Hi, Maria. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. And what a wonderful program. And thank you to Jan and all the people that work with these rescue dogs. I always remember on 9/11 when they were doing all the search and rescuing, and there were dogs there that were comfort dogs. And you would see, you know, firefighters or police officers just covered in soot holding on to those dogs. And it just brings tears to your eyes when you think of the work that dogs do for people. So thank you.
You're welcome. My first partner was just a few months old when 9/11 happened. I had gotten her in August of that year, and so she was, what was she, about 5 months old, five months old when 9/11 happened. And I thought back to when I had first watched that documentary about Mexico City, and I'm looking at that puppy, and I'm truly questioning, can we do it? You know, and you do that throughout your whole career as a canine handler. Are we up to it? Can we do it? You know, are we trained? Are we training properly for it? Is our dog trained for it? So, it is something that comes back to you a lot. Yogi Bear is actually, I call him my 911 dog. There was a widow who lost. She had lost her husband in the towers, and she watched the dogs work the pile, and she created a memorial in her husband's name. It's called the Glenn Thompson Memorial Fund, and that every year they give an amount of money to a canine handler to purchase a canine partner, and Yogi is the result of that. I had applied for that when I knew that I needed to start training a new human remains detection canine, and they awarded me that fund. And he was born on September 9th, just 2 days before the 11th. So I call him my 911 dog.
Oh, boy. Maria, thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, 800-642-1234. Give a call or email to ideas@WPR.org. Kevin emailed to ask if you think that smaller dogs like Papillons and Jack Russells would be better in some situations for search and rescue. Why does it seems like a search and rescue team always use larger dogs?
Well, there are people that do use smaller dogs, and it's up to the handler and the handler working with the canine team to find that perfect partner. And you have to remember that your dog has to have what we call biddability, and that's a mix. A good SAR dog is a mix of drive and biddability. And drive can be difficult to work with if the dog's drive overwhelms their biddability to the point of blowing off commands or running off to chase game, birds, or butterflies. So it depends on the handler. It depends on the breed of dog and their ability to work with that breed.
Lou in Portage has a question for you. Hi, Lou. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was just wondering how the handler and the animal are compensated for their time.
Well, we are volunteers. So we are not. We do take donations. I'm going to throw that out there right now. We do take donations to help keep our team alive and functioning, and but we are not compensated.
How do people make a donation? Does the organization have a website or something?
We do have a website, and that is www.kertk9.org. Also, people can contact our central division's leader at kertwi@hotmail.com. So that would be kertwi@hotmail.com.
Hmm. And the website is kert.k9?
K9.
K in the number 9?
As in the number 9, yes.
Oh, okay. So kert.k9.
kertk9.org.
Ah, kert. K9, and that's the number 9, .org.
Yes.
We'll post those up. We'll post those up on in our program notes. Go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and we'll today's date, and we'll post those addresses up on our Facebook page if somebody wants to follow up on that. For sure. So it's all coming out of your own pocket, pretty much.
It is. And we try to have insurance on our dogs because of the work that we do. Our dogs are in dangerous situations many times, and we have lost dogs. We have had dogs that have had some pretty good medical bills because of the work we do. We try and maintain a fund that does help out handlers within our group to help with those medical bills or vet bills. But we have a boat. We need a boat to train the dogs to locate drowned subjects. We have a trailer that we will take to a search and use that as a base for the search managers to work out of. So there's a lot of cost in keeping the team up and going other than just our own personal cost of our dogs and feeding our dogs and gas getting to and from training and searches.
You mentioned a couple of times now, you've mentioned water searches, and you take the dog out on the water, let's say it's a lake,
mm-hmm.
The dog is just smelling, or what is the?
Well, as soon as you die, you do what's called gassing off, and your body starts turning into different types of gases at different points of their decomposition as soon as you pass away. And that gas is lighter than the water, and it rises to the surface. And you work the boat in a grid pattern based upon where the subject was last seen, and until the dog shows a change in behavior on the boat. And once they can locate where the subject is, divers can go down and locate it. And there's a lot of dangerous situations, especially if you're looking in rivers and there's so much debris. It's much better to work a dog from a boat to try and locate where that subject is before you send divers down into that debris-filled area.
Yeah, I can remember a diver friend of mine talking. He wasn't in a search and rescue, but he was diving in a river that was flooded and looking for something. And he looked up, and a huge tree root went right over the top of him.
Oh,
He'd have been up a little bit higher, he'd have been nailed by that tree root. So you're absolutely right. It's a dangerous situation, and of course, something like what's happening in Florida, or go back to 9/11, where you're working and you don't know if the something else is going to collapse on you.
That I came very close to that once in a rubble situation where something came loose from the fabric roof and had fallen like 4 feet from me. And I just looked at that and I thought, that could have been me underneath that.
And then you just went right on doing what you're doing.
Yeah, kind of crazy sometimes, isn't it?
Jan, I tell you what, this is, I had the privilege of talking, and I'm suddenly blanking on her name, the woman who wrote the book that kind of inspired you too. I had a privilege of interviewing her when that book came out, which is a long time ago.
It was. Fascinating book. If anybody wants to get an understanding of the beginnings of search and rescue, what it was like for women, especially working in search and rescue, and what she had to go through to continue working her dogs, she's a fascinating person.
Well, and the book title again was, I've forgotten it.
So Others May Live.
That's right.
And that is our slogan throughout search and rescue world.
Well, I tell you what, I interviewed her and now I've interviewed you, and you both, you remind me a lot of her because you're caring people who have done wonderful work for a long time. And everybody in this state owes you and your team thank you for all you do.
I'll accept that on behalf of all the other wonderful teams that are in Wisconsin that we are very blessed to work with. And can I say their names, other teams we work with? Canine SOS, and then there's Rapid Search and Rescue. There's Headwater Search and Rescue. There's MinWe, which is Minnesota Wisconsin Search and Rescue. Valley Mounted Equine Search and Rescue. And Sawyer County, just to the north of us, is another team that we will mutual aid with also. And there are a lot of dedicated individuals on all these teams.
Jan, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we have a chance to talk again. Thank you.
I would enjoy that. Thank you.
And that website again was Kurt, K-E-R-T, K and the number 9, kurtk9.org, if you're interested in helping out the organization. And we'll post it up on our page, ideas at WPR.org /Larry, and we'll put that in today's program in the program notes. Great to have her with us. And great to welcome back an old friend, Bill Volker, to talk about fledging birds. That's coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.